You know, I haven't paid a lot of attention to the discussions around the NSA the past month or so, but I have a conspiracy theory I want to share. I think that the NSA is single-handedly responsible for unleashing both Perl and PHP upon the world.
And tune in next week when Mike and I answer hate mail from all the Perl and PHP developers in our audience.
This is Startups for the Rest of Us, episode 152. Welcome to Startups for the Rest of Us, the podcast that helps developers, designers, and entrepreneurs be awesome at launching software products. Whether you've built your first product or you're just thinking about it, I'm Mike.
And I'm Rob.
And we're here to share our experiences to help you avoid the same mistakes we've made. What's the word this week, Rob?
Things are ramping up there. They're starting to get exciting. Drip, you know, I'm doing another small launch, this time to about 25% of our list. And so just cranking out a few last minute things before we go live next week. How about you?
Part of the good news and bad news today, because we're recording a little bit early. So the bad news is that there's not going to be a lot of updates. But I do have some good news to share, and I know it's only been 3 days, but I have my first confirmed paying customer for AutoShark.
Congratulations, man. That's awesome.
So we're still straightening out things with the credit card, but the agreement's already kind of in place. And
this is like a momentous occasion. You have your first pay. How does it feel?
Good. You know, it was nice to get the email because I asked very directly. I just said, now that the remediation information is in there, because you had said that that was going to be a problem before. Now that it's in there and you could take a look at stuff, what do you think? And is this worth paying for? And kind of wanted to get his thoughts on whether he thought it was valuable or not and whether he still found a need for it in his business. And he's like, absolutely, this is, you know, what I was looking for.
That's great news, man. Now to find 500 more people exactly like him.
Yep.
Awesome. Congratulations again.
Thanks.
So I was wondering what your take was on Breck Palumbo's suggestion for scalable content marketing for AutoShark. So Breck Palumbo runs with Scott Yule. He has a podcast called Bootstrapped with Kids. And in episode 23, he outlined a scalable content strategy.
Well, I listened to the episode, and it's funny because at first I was like, oh, I don't think this would really apply to me because the stuff that I'm putting out there is ultra specific, and it's all remediation information. So I wasn't thinking that it would be terribly applicable. It just wouldn't be stuff that people were searching for. And then I got an email from Patrick McKenzie who basically said the exact same thing, but he phrased it differently, and it really made me think about, maybe I could do this. So one of the things that comes to mind, if you haven't gone over and listened to Bootstrap with Kids, definitely listen to not just that episode, but his podcast. His podcast is pretty good. I've been listening to it all along. He lays out the strategy where he has something like 15,000 pages that are published to his website based on information that he's gathering as part of his product. And I could basically do the same type of thing within AutoShark where all the different security control points that I'm looking for, and not just those, but also the steps that you need to go through in order to remediate them. I could take those, dump them from the database, add some metadata around it in order to address some SEO concerns and formatting and things like that, and then publish them to the website and make them indexable by Google.
Yeah, and that's the basis of that whole scalable SEO content marketing, right? Or content. It's not really content marketing because I consider content marketing to be more viral and shareable stuff, but it's getting into Google and getting a large footprint. And then as soon as you have any type of website authority, those pages, they start ranking for those long tail keyword terms. And those are the ones that, you know, if someone's searching for something really specific, they tend to be more likely to have that pain point and more likely to convert. And we've seen Patrick McKenzie use it with success on Bingo Card Creator. And, you know, we've seen Breck use it. We've seen some other examples of it. But I definitely think it's, if nothing else, it's worth a line item in your marketing plan and at least a trial implementation. But the thing is with scalable content, I think once you do a trial implementation, you may as well just scale it up, right? Because if you go to the problem of kind of defining stuff for 100 pages, you might as well go to, you know, to 500.
Oh, definitely. I think there's going to be some work around the formatting side of it. But in terms of the content itself, I don't think that it'd be very difficult to just, if you're going to do it for one page, what's the difference between one and 500? I mean, because you're already kind of automating it for a couple of pages.
Right.
You almost need to do a lot of them in order to figure out whether or not that's going to be boosting the traffic, because most of them are going to be very long tail things that aren't going to get a lot of hits, but the ones that do are going to be fairly targeted.
Right.
So definitely thanks to Brecht and Scott and to Patrick McKenzie.
Now, you mentioned you're having trouble with your Nexus.
Oh, yeah. So it's only a week old, so I'm fairly certain that it's not the hardware, but it feels like it's just buggy. Whenever I open the browser, occasionally it'll just crash on me for no good reason, and I've had it shut down on me just randomly. So I don't know what's up with that, but I've read around a little bit, and it seems like the Nexus has got some bugs in it, and it's more operating system related. And also, a lot of the apps that I download, I feel like every single app wants an always-on connection to the internet so that they can phone home. And if you don't have an internet connection, they just don't work. If it weren't for those apps, I could deal with the bugs. It's a brand new tablet. It's probably going to have some bugs here and there. They're going to issue some updates. I'm not real worried about that. The thing that bugs me is the apps always wanting this constantly on internet connection. Right. That's the part that bugs me, because if I'm using it on a plane or something like that, I'm not going to have that. So, and what's the point of having a 32 gig flash drive in it if it's not even going to be used?
Sure. Yeah, that makes it tough.
I'm going to keep it and kind of see how things play out. But, like I said, it was an experiment to just kind of dip my toes into other, realms of technology.
Sure.
Today's episode is called Strategies for Loading Up Your Pre-Launch Lists. And we got an email from Jack over at collabinate.com. And he says, "Hi, guys. Love the show. I've listened to every episode and was inspired enough to come to MicroConf 2013, which was amazing. I'm building a service called Collabinate, which provides an API for hosted activity streams. It's like Twilio for building Facebook or Twitter-style feeds into your apps, letting you surface information for your users without making them dig. I'm writing because of something Rob said in the last episode. You mentioned you had 1,400 subscribers to the Drip mailing list. My question is, how the heck did you get that many signups pre-launch? I've had my landing page up for a few months now with AdWords and Facebook ads pointing people to it for last month, and I still have under 50 subscribers. Do I just need to spend more on ads, or do you guys have other better strategies for getting more people interested to sign up? Thanks again for the great content you guys put out." So today what we're going to be doing is we're going to be talking about some of the different options you have for helping to scale up and build that list. And then we're going to also talk about some of the things to keep in mind while you're doing that, or in some cases before you go about launching into some of these different options. So the first one is to find websites that accept startup submissions. And there's at least a couple of dozen places where you can do this. I've used a beta list in the past. I've got a spreadsheet that I put together with a bunch of them. So you can just go to Google and search for like startup announcements or software betas, things like that. There are a lot of different websites out there, including Reddit. I think Reddit has a couple of subreddits where you can go in and you can, I think one of them is called Rate My Startup or something along those lines. There's tons and tons of places where you can post links back to your website and not just get signups, but also get people giving you feedback and comments on either design or the product itself. You do have to be a little bit careful about some of that feedback, because if they're not actually interested in buying it, then you kind of want to take some of their suggestions with a bit of a grain of salt.
With Drip, I was able to get it on several of these kind of beta, these pre-launch sites, because there are two different types of these. There are some that only accept startups that have launched. I think like Killer Startups is like that and a few others. But then you mentioned beta list, and there are just some that are pointing more to like landing pages or startups that are in beta or going to be launching soon. And with beta list in particular, I'm pretty sure I got almost 300 email signups when it appeared on that site. So this is definitely something that's worth spending at least a little bit of time on. All of the sites are not going to list you, because they do get a lot of submissions, and all of them are not going to lead to 300 signups. But if in aggregate you can either spend an hour or pay a VA to spend a couple hours and do this, it's certainly something in those early days, doing the things that don't scale to kind of get the momentum going. It's definitely up there.
One of the things I did was I compiled this list of different sites and then handed it off to somebody to go through all the different sites and get all of the required fields that they were asking for, and just build a spreadsheet so that I knew all the information that they were asking for. And then either I will go through it, or I'll probably have somebody else go through and just paste in the answers to all the different questions that they were asking. So there's definitely ways to kind of scale this out and farm out different pieces of it. But there are things like the description, the sales pitch, things like that. Those are things that you're going to want to kind of craft a little bit and put a fair amount of thought into. It's not like you can just say, "Oh, well, I need you to go fill out all these different forms," because things like, the founder's name and your website and things like that, those are very straightforward. But there are other things like the sales pitches and the URLs and stuff. Some of them you're going to want to use tracking mechanisms for that kind of stuff. another option for building your mailing list is to use social media like Twitter or Facebook. I've been using Twitter to build up the following for Audit Shark, and I've actually started getting large enough following that people from that are filtering back into my mailing list. So basically, certain tweets that are going out specifically mention Audit Shark. Hey, check this out. And I embed different tags in there from Google to be able to do the goal tracking and identify clearly whether or not somebody clicked through from Twitter and then onto the landing page and then actually submitted their email address.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. If you're going to do this, you should absolutely set up goals in Google Analytics so that you can see which sources are converting for you, because it's not just about driving traffic, it's about driving actual emails. And the nice part about this is if you vet these traffic sources early, then once you launched and you're actually going after paying customers, you already know which traffic sources you are going to focus on. So I haven't done much with the social media angle, like a GetDrip Twitter account and Facebook page, but they're just placeholders at this point, and I haven't used them to drive leads at all.
Third option is to ask to be a guest on podcasts. And there's a couple of different things that this will do for you. The first one is that typically it will get you links back to your website and drive some traffic and SEO a little bit. But the other thing is that it gets you in front of more people. And clearly you don't want to just blast out an email to tons and tons of different podcasts and just ask if you can be a guest on their show. What you really want to do is focus on the podcasts that you believe are going to have an audience that overlaps with whatever problem your podcast solves. So if, for example, for Audit Shark, I would probably go on to tech-oriented podcasts or anything that has to do with DevOps, security management, those types of things. I wouldn't want to go on to a podcast that talks about marketing and say, hey, you guys should lock down your servers. It's not really applicable to the audience. And when you start making those pitches, I almost feel like it would make you look bad by making a sales pitch to somebody to have you come on their show when it's just totally not relevant to their audience because they're not going to get anything out of it.
Absolutely. And the thing to keep in mind when you're pitching podcasts is you're not pitching your product, you're pitching a story. And so what is the compelling story that you can offer to their audience? What is the way that you can make their podcast look good? And so when I go on podcasts, I always make sure that I'm not on there to talk about Drip or to talk about Hittail, but I'm there to educate their audience on how to market. And then I use, maybe Drip as an example. Or I'll go on to talk about how to support an app or how to scale something. And, again, it always gets mentioned because that's the experience. It's kind of mentioned on the side, and that drives people to the site just because they become kind of curious about what you're up to. So I found that it seems like the podcast listeners, if you're in the right niche and you do get a nice lock-in with your core audience that you provide a lot of value to, then it works really well. But as soon as you stray out of that, like Mike said, the conversion rates go down.
Something else to keep in mind when you're pitching to podcasters is that you don't want to send out those blanket emails. As Rob said, you do want to tell a story, and you want to make sure that you tell them exactly how your story is relevant to their audience.
Right. And I think you will have better luck talking about your product after it's launched unless you already have a story to tell before it's launched, right? You need something interesting to talk about. And when I've pitched podcasts, I typically start with the people that I know, because they're just going to be more likely to let me on. And then once I have a few of them, then you can kind of start branching out because you've gotten better about talking about your product and your pitch gets a little better. But I hand send emails to every single podcaster. I would never do a bulk send because you really have to hand tune that pitch in order for it to be anywhere near relevant. I will also, if I don't listen to the podcast regularly, I will go back and listen to the previous 3 or 5 episodes just to figure out if, in fact, my information is a good fit for their audience.
Great points. The fourth one is to use paid traffic on some of the various ad networks. I did a quick search for ad network on Google, and on the first page, there was a search result named 25 ad networks for online businesses. So these different ad networks are very easy to find. Google AdWords is clearly not the only one. LinkedIn isn't the only one. Facebook isn't the only one. There are a lot of them out there. And some of them are very niche ad networks. So you can find some that only cater to certain audiences. And if you can find one that caters to the audience that your product solves a problem for, then you're going to have much better results with that particular ad network than with some of the others.
Yep. I've done this every time. Every time I'm going to launch something, and I did it with Drip as well. This is a great way to find out which ad networks are going to work for yours. And I absolutely got it probably in the several hundred, and it may even be 1,000 signups from this approach.
The fifth one is something that I've started doing recently is I subscribe to helpareporter.com, and I've been looking for any reporters that are doing stories that are related to security. And if you're not familiar with helpareporter.com, they have a daily email that goes out, I think, 3 times a day, and it will include all these different reporters and a summary of what they're looking for in terms of a story. They're generally looking for sources of information. I got one today that was specifically looking for security practices that you educate your new employees on in small and medium businesses. And they tend to spell out exactly what they're looking for, whether they want to do an interview. Sometimes they'll say exactly who they're going to be doing the story for. Sometimes they'll just say that it's an anonymous source, or they'll say it's a podcast or something along those lines. I've even seen other startups that are doing this because they are trying to find content for their blog and they're looking for people to interview. So that's another way. It's more SEO related. It's not necessarily related to loading up your pre-launch list, but that's another avenue for marketing your startup.
And I used to use Help a Reporter. It became too time consuming at a certain point. If you have a bit more budget than you do time, there is a service that I use. It's called BitesizePR.com. It's $89 a month, and you enter a bunch of info and they monitor Help a Reporter for you, and they actually write the pitches for you. You know, you approve them or edit them and reject them. And then if a reporter contacts, then obviously you talk to that reporter, but they basically take a lot of the grunt work. And the 3 emails a day was a bit overwhelming for me. So
the sixth strategy is to set up Google Alerts and let Google search for new pages which match your search criteria. And in some ways, this could be a little bit overloading, just like you said that you found helpareporter.com to be, because you'll get emails from Google all the time, and typically you set up these searches, and what you're looking for is anywhere where people are talking about something that relates to your product. You'll want to go in, take a look, and see if there are any non-salesy ways you can comment on whatever the topic is, because a lot of these things will come back from blogs. Sometimes you'll see things that are on sales pages of your competitors. Those you can generally safely ignore because, you know, they're not usually going to allow people to just randomly comment on their site. But any blog articles that come up, what you'll do is you'll put a signature into the profile that you set up and then put that link back to your website, and that'll help drive some traffic back to your site. You'll probably want to use a VA for this kind of thing to kind of sort through and filter the data. I would say that this is probably not one of the best sources for loading your pre-launch list because, one, it's time consuming, and two, you're going to have to put a lot of time and effort into it, and you're relying on traffic that they're getting. So you're also going to have probably some issues putting in any sort of tracking codes in the URLs that go back to your website. I would definitely rank this lower on the list than a lot of these other strategies.
But I actually think there's more value here than just building your pre-launch list. If you really are getting alerts and you're seeing blog posts come up or forum threads or stuff of that nature, and you go in and participate, you're going to learn a lot about that audience, and you're going to learn about whether they are interested in your product. And if you actually post and then, you know, into a forum or a comment discussion, and you come back and see what people have said, that alone could help you hone your value prop, hone your headline, hone a direction that your product's going to go in. I mean, you could really get into almost a customer development type discussion. So I think there's potentially more value here than just building a list. It's obviously not scalable, but I have definitely done this and spent many hours kind of pounding the pavement in this fashion.
So the seventh option is to ask bloggers if you can write guest articles on their websites. And something to keep in mind here is this is very similar to approaching podcasters and asking them if you can be a guest on their show. Make sure that you're making individual sales pitches to these guys, but also save your best material for these blog posts. You don't want to be putting your best material on your own blog. You want to be putting it elsewhere so that will help drive that traffic back to your website.
I mean, this is an entire art, right, of trying to pitch and get guest blog posts. I get pitched probably once or twice a week for people to guest post to my blog, and anyone that I don't know or haven't had some connection with almost always gets a no. If you follow me, if we've interacted at least once and you pitch a compelling story, you'll see there are a lot of guest posts on my blog recently because people are doing exciting things. And since, you know, we met at MicroConf, or we've emailed in the past, or I have some buy-in or some interest in their story, it just makes it so much more likely that I'm actually going to say yes. And so, yeah, to be honest, there are some pretty good stories like on Hacker News and some other marketing blogs about how to market your app through guest posts. And like I said, there's a lot to it, a lot more than we can cover in this episode. So I would go to Google and search for that and do some research, because there's a right way to do this and a wrong way to do it. So the eighth strategy for loading up your pre-launch list is to use SEO. And a lot of people think, you know, why would I do SEO so early? Because doesn't it take months and months to rank for a term? Is it really going to, you know, actually play out before my launch? There's a couple of responses to that. A lot of people think that their app is only going to take 3 or 4 months to build, and it winds up taking you 10 or 11 months. And in that time, you can do a heck of a lot of SEO. And even if you don't, you know, get a number one ranking, you know, in time to build your list, you'll be way ahead of the game than if you wait until you actually launch. So that's the first thing. Second thing is, I have seen using long tail, like using tactics that go after long tail keywords, or giving away some pretty specific like templates that are related to your business. Like, you know, BidSketch, when Ruben first started, he gave away web design templates and that kind of stuff. And that was way in advance of his launch. And that was a big reason that his mailing list grew. I've seen people give away email templates. I've seen people give away all types of stuff that's, you know, landing page templates, all types of stuff that's actually actionable. And so if you plug those two together, where you're doing some SEO for terms that, you know, other people aren't doing a fantastic job with, and you're giving something away and letting them know, hey, if you do this, we'll also let you know when we launch so that they're aware of it, you can grow your list a lot faster that way.
Yeah, I've seen people giving away different white papers or ebooks or things like that on their websites. And a lot of times I'll see this as a strategy post-launch, but I think you're right. You can definitely use this pre-launch in order to start building your mailing list and getting people interested in it. And you can also use that to start discussions and help guide the product direction before you launch, so that when you do launch, so that you aren't just listening to crickets while you're trying to wait for sales.
And the ninth and final strategy is to pick some strategic early access customers. One thing that's happened with Drip is a lot of the early access customers that have been using it and been happy with it, they are bloggers themselves. They have large Twitter followers. And I haven't even asked them, but they have almost all of them written a post, a link to Drip, talked about it on Twitter, mentioned that they signed up. You know, just they've started to create a buzz, which I've really appreciated. If you are able to strategically pick some people who actually have audiences, the odds are that, you know, they always need fresh content and they always want to talk about what they're doing, new things that they're innovating. And so if you're building something interesting and you do have the potential to let in people with audiences, I would always opt to do that early on.
So those are 9 different strategies that you can use for loading up your pre-launch list. Now, as part of these strategies, there are definitely some things that you want to keep in mind. The first thing you want to keep in mind is that you want to use landing pages as much as possible so that you can test what text is and isn't converting. Because if you're bringing that traffic to your website and it's untargeted traffic, and by untargeted, I mean it's not targeted at a specific page, you're not trying to pitch them on, you know, some other website and bring them in. There's a disjointed experience between the other site that they were on and the one that they're going to. If they click on, I don't know, something that says peaches and you show them a picture of oranges, that's a disjointed experience. It's just not going to jive with what their expectations are, and they're probably just going to bounce off the page.
The other thing, you know, I mentioned it earlier, is definitely set up goals. And Google Analytics is the way I do it. There are obviously other options, but if you don't know which of your sources are converting, then you're leaving a lot of data on the table.
Another thing to keep in mind is do not rely 100% on the vendor's conversion trackers for some of the different ad networks. One of the ones that I've been using pretty extensively lately is Facebook, and their conversion tracker, sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. It's really kind of bizarre. It just some things it does, it just doesn't make a lot of sense, and there are things that they do where they'll count something and then I won't see it on my website. What you really want to do is make sure that you're using something that's kind of a tried and true mechanism. I use Kissmetrics. I also use Google Analytics. But you want to use something in addition to whatever it is that they're offering so that you know that it's working. You essentially get a double check on those numbers so that you understand whether or not they're correct and you know whether or not to look for something else.
Another thing I would do early on is install your remarketing pixel. So, you know, there's a bunch of providers for remarketing, like perfectaudience.com or adroll.com. I think Google does it as well. I've tried 4 different providers, and I found Perfect Audience to be the best. It converted the best for me. But I have had the retargeting pixel installed on Drip since the first day I launched the landing page. Now, the cookies only last, I think, for 60 days or 90 days, so I won't be able to retarget, you know, everyone who ever visited the site. But when I do launch, I'll have the previous 60 to 90 days worth of people who visited and didn't give me their email address, and I will be able to then show them ads and say, hey, you know, Drip has launched, or check this out, because I know that they're at least mildly interested in the product. And so before you start driving traffic to your landing page, I would highly recommend, it's free to sign up for you know, again, Perfect Audience or AdRoll, grab the tracking pixel and put it on your website so that, that you can start basically cooking those folks as interested parties.
And something that kind of ties into that a little bit is if you are doing paid advertising to drive people through, if you don't have time to manage and track that paid advertising campaign, shut it down because you're basically just throwing money away. There's a lot of little tweaks and stuff. You really have to be paying attention to these and put a process in place that allows you to understand whether or not it's working. And if it's not, you either need to make the tweaks or just kill that particular one because there's a lot of different things that you can try. And if you're not paying attention to those, you're just basically flushing money down the drain.
If you have a question for us, call our voicemail number at 888-801-9690 or email us at questions@startupsfortherestofus.com. Our theme music is an excerpt from We're Out of Control by Moot, used under Creative Commons. Subscribe to us in iTunes by searching for Startups or by RSS at startupsfortherestofus.com, where you'll also find a full transcript of each episode. Thanks for listening. See you next time.